Hi, I'm Pete McCall. Welcome to All About Fitness. I'm doing this episode as a special edition because I have a very special guest on today. Dr. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi is a distinguished professor of psychology at the Claremont Graduate School in Southern California. Dr. Csikszentmihalyi is the author of Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. He is one of the groundbreaking researchers in this field of how we can achieve a flow state and how we can use it to improve happiness in our lives. I'm not going into much of an introduction, but we'll wrap up a little discussion about flow and a little clarification about our conversation today. So it's my honor on All About Fitness to welcome Dr. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi.
We call flow is a particular experience that people feel when they are doing something that is challenging and difficult, but that they feel, the person feels they have the skills. If they do things right, they will be able to reach that goal that they do have. And this can be any type of goal. I mean, for a child, if you look at a small infant who first time that is able to turn on the light by moving a switch on the wall and sees suddenly he or she makes light, and then she went dark again and light again and dark again. It's they learn that, the child learns, wow, I can make this happen. You know, this is incredible. I can make light, I can make dark. This happens then with any new thing that we can master, any change in the environment or in or even in thinking, you know, we are able to now think about things that before we had no idea existed, and now we are playing around with ideas and so forth. So this is the kind of reward of being alive, and being having certain skills or certain abilities to act in the world. And it's what makes us go, in a way, even though most of the time we take it for granted and we don't realize that what we do is really pretty amazing from a certain point of view. But we usually, when we start stagnating, when we don't do anything new or anything difficult, then we are kind of no longer living to the full, and then we start feeling depressed and hopeless and so forth. So it is good to be able to act in the world, either by making new things happen, like an artist who creates something that didn't exist, or a scientist who can make a new technology or a new machine or a new product through his work. Then, and of course, as parents, we have children, which are amazing, you know, the ability to reproduce and to bring up children and so forth. So all of this is part of being alive and being able to develop ways of relating to the world and learning and acting and so forth. And sports are one of the most obvious ways in which we can show who we are, what we can do by running faster than we did before, or jumping higher than we did before, or throwing a weight or a discus. You know, these are expressions of who we are, expressions. I am somebody who can do this. I am somebody who can do that. I run faster than I did a week ago, or I can run faster than the other people who I compete against. So this is an expression. All of these activities are expressions of what you can do and what the person can do, and therefore it defines who we are. It shows who we are. We exist. We can do these things, and that's the kind of person we are. So that's the short answer. Okay.
Well, to ask that, because didn't you come across flow states? If I read correctly, weren't you studying happiness? I think you're from the point of view of where your work was, you were looking at psychology. A lot of psychology focused on what was wrong with us. And I think as a psychologist, you were one of the first ones, but you were one of the first ones who looked at happiness and how do we pursue happiness. Isn't that how you kind of came across the flow states?
No, it's the other way around. Because of the flow state, which I started describing 25 years ago, by doing that, I began to say, hey, why don't we have more of this in everyday life? Why can't we experience this state more often? And in trying to do that, I realized that most of psychology is focused on alleviating pathology, to making people normal. But most of the people who are normal are not very, either very happy or very feel that their life is worth living, you know. And so I said, psychology is missing something here. And I realized that there were other people who feel like that, and they felt in the past, like Abraham Maslow and Carl Jung and so forth. And then one winter when I was taking off with my wife in Hawaii for the holidays, winter holidays, I ran into a guy at the beach who said, oh, aren't you Mike Csikszentmihalyi? I said, yes. And he turned out to be the president-elect of the American Psychological Association, Martin Seligman. And so we started talking. There was not that much to do on the beach. and we talked and we had dinner with our wives. I had my wife, he had his wife. And so for the next few days that our vacations overlapped, we spent a lot of time talking about what psychology should be. And because he was then, as I say, he was just becoming then the president of the APA, American Psychological Association, we kind of agreed that this would be a good idea. I mean, I think he would have done it anyway, but he wanted to leave a legacy for his presidency. And so he supported this new position that we shared about we needed a more positive emphasis on psychology and not to replace the old kind of pathology-oriented psychology, but to enrich it, because it would tell us what we can aspire once we are kind of more or less normal, you know, that what is beyond normal in a sense. And so that worked out well. He was able to change a lot of psychology by supporting this viewpoint. And I ended up starting the first graduate program in psychology. And then Marty Seligman started also one at UPenn, where he is teaching. But their program is only to the master's level, and we have a PhD program on positive psychology here at Claremont. It's been fun. It's been great fun because we get some excellent students applying who want to, felt constrained in a certain, to a certain extent by the psychologist. Was defined until recently, and they wanted to look at the bright side of life, and that's what we are trying to do. And as I say, we have some excellent students who are beginning to publish and write, and I hope we can survive and prosper for a while and affect the way psychology is practiced.
I think you're already having a significant impact, and because the idea, even though you've been studying this for 25 years or so, for the past few months, past maybe half a year, a number of other, as an educator in the fitness industry, I've heard a number of other educators, and we go around, we teach trainers and fitness people how to do fitness and teach fitness. But I've heard other people refer to flow, and is exercise, in your golden rule, one of your golden rules for triggers, one of the ways to achieve flow is by challenging the skills and focusing on, and another way is to focus on the present moment. So in that sense, is using exercise in general and maybe like a challenging workout program specifically, are those effective ways to kind of to change the way people feel and to work towards a flow state?
Well, sure. I mean, partly it means that whoever deals with children should be paying a lot of attention to the individual child. If you are a parent or a teacher, you should, mostly a parent though, you should kind of realize what turns your child on and try to use that both as a leverage for developing the child's feeling of self-esteem that, what I do is interesting or meaningful or and I can do it well because here my father or mother are interested in it and they support it and they try to give me more challenge once I finished doing what I'm. First, I have to master what I'm doing now, and then raise a little bit of the challenge and so forth. One of the most interesting little books written on this was actually by Aldous Huxley, who wrote a book called Island, which is not as well known as his more famous ones, but Island is a story of a group of British middle-class families taking a kind of a vacation on a ship. Going around the world, and the ship for some reason ends up springing a leak when they are approaching an island in the somewhere in the Galapagos or something way out from civilization. And before the ship sinks, everybody gets into the boats and they row to the island. And the island is deserted, and they have to make a living there. But these are all kind of intellectuals or middle class people who want their children to be educated and brought up, and they have small children with them and they have to develop a school for them, and the parents decide that the most important thing to do for them is to teach them to do rock climbing, because there's lots of rocks in the island. It's a kind of a mountainous volcanic island. And why rock climbing? Because, okay, what you learn are the basic things there. Namely, basic things is that you are responsible for your own life, but you can also trust your life to someone who will trust his life in your hands or her life in your hands. And if you learn that you are responsible for your life and you are responsible for other people's life, you are going to be well set then for it's the basic thing on which to build some future. And so that's what they do, and it turns out to be a very successful thing. The kids learn to take their life in their hands and to take the life of other people in their hands by being at the other end of the rope, which they rescued from the ship before the ship sank. But anyway, this little book is not well known, but I think as a primer in early education, it's really on the money. Now, we can't do that because we are not shipwrecked, and so we don't want to risk our kids' lives to bring them up. But it may not be actually rock climbing, but the thing is that you have to transmit to the child a sense that they have their life in their own hands, that they are not just travelers and kind of privileged travelers whose needs are going to be taken care of, and they don't have much responsibility except to do well in school and whatever that means, you know. But here, learning is part of surviving, you know, and it's we forget that all of the math and the history and the whatever we learn in school are kind of a privileged entryway into the history of humanity. And the people who wrote those books or who did those experiments often risked their lives or were committed to write down what they learned, but they went through. It wasn't an easy thing for them to even survive, and many of them were even recently. I mean, if you look at the let's say the Curie, Marie Curie and her husband, who developed X-rays and many other things in this, that helped humanity. They dedicated themselves to this because they thought it was important, but they risked their lives. I mean, they went with a bunch of donkeys in the mountains of Bohemia, where they knew that there were radioactive minerals there, and they excavated this radioactive stuff and put it in sacks and boxes that they attached to the donkeys, and then they spent a month going back to France. And they, by the time they built the first X-ray machines, before they built that, they almost died because of the radiation, which they didn't know that would affect them that much. But they learned the hard way, because they were kind of crippled by the X-rays. But they did build the first diagnostic machines that could actually take pictures of the inside of people's bodies and so forth. So whether they are astronomers or they are biologists or whatever, the people who advance science often did risk their lives to get to the knowledge. So this little book by Huxley is not so far-fetched, except that it's based on starting that way from preschool, in a sense. So anyway, it's knowledge is power, but it's also can be dangerous if it's misunderstood or misused. And of course, the misused is more often the case. You know, people take knowledge to build weapons instead of protecting us from natural disasters.
That can definitely be. And before we run out of time, Professor, I want to really respect your time. Can you just tell us a little bit? I want to ask specifically about your recent book, Running Flow. What's one way in using running? Because running is an activity that many people can do and many people enjoy. How can somebody, what's one way that running can be used to kind of achieve or promote the flow state or of finding a flow state?
Well, yeah, it's, we know that people who do get into the practice, the habit of running regularly, benefit from it in many ways. But the thing is that these are people who are not forced to run, but choose to do it. And like almost anything, I think, is that anything that promotes flow has to either start as a choice, personal, or has to become a personal choice after they try it. We know of people, for instance, who don't want to run, but their older sibling or parent push them to get out and start doing some running, and they don't really like it at first. But if they catch on and they say, "Hey, I really feel better after I do this, so I will start. I will look forward to doing the next run," and so forth. If it becomes voluntary, then it will contribute to you know, not only physically, but also it will become a source of enjoyment and long-term well-being. But how you do that? Well, even if you are forced to do it at first, it's important that whoever makes you run doesn't try to shock you into running by making it a real difficult thing to do at first, or something too simple that doesn't seem worth doing because you don't feel at all different after you run. So you have to, it should be a run that makes you, at the end, makes you feel, wow, I didn't think I could do that. I felt really kind of a little on the edge there, almost too much, but I did it. And that's the sweet spot between under-challenge and over-challenge. And that sweet spot is very important. And if you have children or you have responsibility for children, you have to know that if you try to get them to run too much or too fast at first, after a while the child gets turned off and you don't realize that you are actually shutting off a future of productive running by making it too hard at first, too stressful. There are things that are kind of okay when the child is very young, but it becomes boring later out if you don't raise the ante, or there are things that are too demanding at first, and then they won't do it again unless they're forced to do it. For instance, we had two kids who, two boys who didn't really challenge them physically much except by hiking, and we taught them also to climb. I was a climber when I was a teenager, and so they like to do it at an easy pace at first. Then when we didn't, if I tried to do something too difficult, they didn't like it. But I learned that after they moved on to college and so forth, they went back to doing climbing on their own, and they at their own pace, and they did that okay. And but even earlier, for instance, we took them to the zoo. We were close to a major zoo in Chicago. And they loved us when they were young, 3, 4, or 5 years old. They loved to see the animals and stuff. But then we noticed that they were more and more reluctant to go to the zoo when they were 7, 8 years, 9 years old. And finally, it became very, very obvious that they didn't want to go. So we sat down with them and asked why. You don't want to go to the zoo anymore? And they say, well, you know, actually, we love the animals, but we feel very sad to see them in the cage. And So at the end of the trip at the zoo, we feel sad, and we didn't want to feel that. So that's kind of the opposite. You didn't realize that your kid is no longer seeing the same, the activity is not the same for them because they know too much. They have developed emotionally to the point where they realize, they empathize with the animals, and they feel sad that they are caged and so. So these are things that you don't notice unless you pay attention to the children, and you learn what is suddenly changed for them, because they have realized that they're mature enough to empathize, to feel that this is kind of wrong or not quite right. And so the major thing is to keep track of your child learning and developing, and then realizing that some things are no longer appropriate for them, or either because they are too simple and too boring, or because the same activity suddenly has changed in meaning for them, and you know, you need to find something else that is appropriate for their development. Being a parent is not a simple thing, and it's really an art and a profession that you have to take seriously and learn from it and make sure that you're not interfering or that you're not challenging them enough or challenging too much or the wrong way. You know, it's fun to be a parent, but it's not easy.
Well, Professor, I really, really appreciate your insights on flow. I really appreciate your expertise and your work in the area. And I'm going to have a link down below to a couple of your books, so if people are interested in learning a little bit more about flow and the flow states and how they can help others achieve them, they can definitely use your work as a source of reference.
Okay, thank you.
As you can tell, Dr. Csikszentmihalyi is not a native speaker of English, so hopefully you could understand what we were talking about. Now, one point of clarification, during the interview, I kept wondering why he would refer to kids, why he a couple of times he referred to, well, for kids, we want to achieve flow state. And I think that fault is mine, because when we were setting up the interview, when I went back and listened to the tape, and I told Dr. Csikszentmihalyi, I wanted to talk about the role that flow plays in the aging process. Now, in my mind, I was talking about the role of flow states and how we can achieve flow states throughout the adult aging process as we get into our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. And I think the doctor understood, you know, or heard me say aging process and thought it meant kids. So a couple of his answers came back to discussing flow state in kids. Now, at first, I was thinking about not using the interview. But I respected his time. I respect the fact he gave me 35, 40 minutes of his time. So I didn't feel right in not running the interview. And second, I just got finished editing Gray Cook's, the podcast I did with Gray Cook. And at the end of my conversation with Gray talks about the role that movement plays in kids. We get into a whole discussion about how we take movement away from kids and why movement is so important to a child's life. So it made sense to me that since that was the end of my conversation with Gray Cook, that the next podcast I put up be with Dr. Csikszentmihalyi, where he's discussing flow state with an application of the flow state to kids. Because a lot of my listeners, like myself, I think a lot of listeners out there, you probably have kids. And I think, you know, understanding what flow is, number one, and I'm going to go into that in a minute here, but understanding what flow is and understanding and kind of learning some things that we can do to help our kids achieve flow, and maybe what we can do ourselves to achieve flow, can help us maybe, you know, use exercise, not necessarily to lose weight or any of that stuff, but use exercise to achieve a better mental state. And that's getting a little bit out of my wheelhouse. I mean, I'm not a mental health expert by any stretch of the imagination, not by a long shot. But the point is, I want people to think about using exercise not as a means to an end, but as part of a process to have a healthier life. You know, the tagline that I like to use is exercise gives you freedom. Being fit gives you freedom. And I have to be 100% honest that I was first introduced to the concept of flow states only a few months ago by John Wolf from Onnit. In my interview with him, John Wolf talked about flow, and he referred me to a book called The Rise of Superman by an author, Stephen Kotler. Well, after reading Rise of Superman and after reading Catching Fire, which is Steve Kotler's second book on the topic of flow, I've been reading more and more about flow states. I'll probably be doing a couple talks about exercise and flow, and I'm going to be writing an article about, you know, using exercise to achieve flow state. So I've been doing a little research in that area, and I thought I'd just go straight to the source and reach out to Dr. Csikszentmihalyi to see if he'd be interested in talking about it. For those of you that aren't familiar with what flow is, flow is, you know, kind of a state where things happen easily. It's what athletes achieve. The Rise of Superman by Stephen Kotler talks about extreme athletes and how they become hyper-focused. About a flow state is where you really lose track of time. You lose track of self. You lose sense of self. You're focused on the now. And if you think about what extreme athletes do, you know, jumping out of an airplane, go flying down a mountain on a mountain bike, you know, go flying down a mountain on skis. You can't worry about what you did yesterday. You can't be too focused on what you're doing tomorrow, but you got to be caught up in the here and now. So, you know, to take a look at what, you know, kind of some flow triggers are, you know, Kotler, you know, writes about it. And again, a lot of Kotler's work is based on what he's termed the Flow Genome Project, which is kind of an evolution of what Csikszentmihalyi started studying 30 years ago. So that's how this kind of all comes together. But really what's happening is when you're in a flow state, well, number one, a flow state is initiated by certain triggers. There has to be some risk involved. There has to be some novelty. You're doing something new. There has to be some complexity, some unpredictability. And when you look at that, you know, certain exercises can bring that about. Dr. Csikszentmihalyi's recent book was on running, you know, kind of achieving a flow state through running. And I'm going to have a link to that down in the show notes below because you can use running. But you can also look at the CrossFit. I think CrossFit is an excellent example of achieving a flow state. Because in CrossFit, the different WODs from day to day, obviously if you're lifting heavy weight, there's a certain risk in it. If you're doing different workouts, there's a novelty. And there's a certain complexity and unpredictability. So it kind of meets those needs. And those aren't all the triggers for flow, but there's just some of them that I wanted to highlight. Those meet the needs. And what flow states do, you know, if you pursue a flow state, it's a state of feeling, but it's brought on by certain neurotransmitters. You know, it's norepinephrine, dopamine, you know, endorphins, oxytocin, serotonin. These are all neurotransmitters that change brain chemistry. And that's what exercise does. And a lot of us don't realize that. You know, there's a couple of my future guests coming up. We go into a little bit of the neurophysiology and the chemistry of exercise science, because I don't think a lot of people realize that when we exercise, we're changing the structure of our cells. Mechanical forces change the structure of our cells. Bone cells, fascia cells, muscle cells change as a result of forces we put into it. That term is mechanotransduction. But also, too, we're changing, you know, the chemical physiology, the neurophysiology, the hormones in our body. You know, flow is brought on by certain neurotransmitters. You know, neurotransmitters are another type of chemical. Neurotransmitters and hormones are simply just, you know, chemicals that cause certain tissue changes in the body. I have an upcoming podcast where I go into understanding different hormones that affect our body. So I wanted to have Dr. Csikszentmihalyi in here to talk about flow states. And even though he kind of geared the conversation towards kids, I think that there's a lot that we can learn from what we discuss and a lot that we have to realize that we can find flow in our daily lives. You know, since my conversation with John Wolfe and since I started going down this avenue a couple months ago, I've gotten back on my mountain bike and I'm working on a couple projects right now. What I'm finding is if I go for a little, you know, 35 to 60 minute mountain bike ride, which isn't long by mountain biking standards, but it's on a hill right behind my house here in North County, San Diego. If I do that, then I find that I'm much more productive during the day. And what I've really started doing is to take it a step further and start adding meditation to that. Because meditation can be a key way to achieve flow. Kotler writes about that in his books, and he refers to that in his website on the Flow Genome Project, is that meditation can be a way that we can kind of set the mind right to achieve a flow state. And so what I've been playing around with is meditation and exercise. How does meditation and exercise work? And can that initiate a flow state? You know, I don't know for sure, and I'm certainly not doing any kind of validity research. I'm not going to try to publish this, but it's just playing around with it. So a couple times in group fitness classes, for people to take group fitness classes, that's maybe why I've had you meditate for a minute before we exercise. I want you to think about the process, because one of the flow triggers is you're focusing on what you're doing. You're being in the moment. One of the flow triggers is you're focused on the here and now. You know, think about that extreme athlete. Think about that, you know, think about a professional athlete playing basketball, for example. You know, you're focused on the here and now. You're hyper-focused on what you're doing. Your brain's shutting down. You know, you can read Kotler's book. You can read Csikszentmihalyi's work to really understand the neurophysiology and the chemistry of what's going on. But the brain's shutting down to allow you to focus on what you're doing right now. And I think we need more of that in our lives. I think we need that ability to shut out, you know, extra noise. Oh, now that I think about it, the podcast is kind of extra noise. But anyway, you're listening to this so you can learn a little bit more about the flow state. But what I think we need to be able to do is work more on the process. You know, from my reading on flow, you know, I'm really starting to think that maybe we're getting exercise wrong. I mean, yes, we need to have some goals. Yes, if you need to be healthier and you need to lose a certain amount of weight to support health, absolutely have a goal of losing. But be specific about a weight loss goal. Saying I want to lose some weight is not specific. You know, be specific about a goal that you want to achieve from exercise. And then once you set a goal, take a step back and focus on the process. Focus on the process of the workout. You know, what I'm playing around with, you know, the meditation aspect of it is, you know, and I'm finding that to me, it's easier to deadlift a few hundred pounds than it is to meditate for 5 to 7 minutes. I've said that before with a couple different guests. But meditation before exercise, what I'm finding allows me to kind of achieve a flow state, so I'm hyper-focused on what I'm doing during the workout. It doesn't mean the workout's super hard, doesn't mean that I'm doing anything unusual, and let's be honest, I am not trying to get a beach body. I am not trying to, you know, be putting half-naked selfies of myself all over social media. That's the furthest thing from what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is play around with ways that we can use fitness to enhance our life, use fitness to give us the ability to do what we want to do. And I think understanding flow states and how to achieve the flow state is a key component of that. And that's going to be something I challenge you as a listener to do. What can you do differently about exercise? If we're always hung out, I need to do this workout. I need to do this high-intensity interval training. I need this outcome from exercise. Take a step back. If you enjoy exercise, focus on the process. If you enjoy going to a class because the instructor's fun and engaging and high energy, enjoy the process. Don't worry about the outcome. Enjoy the process. Enjoy that cycling class. Enjoy that yoga class. Enjoy that workout with a trainer. Enjoy that walk with your dogs. You know, don't worry so much about, okay, this is going to, you know, don't worry so much about the outcome. That's a lot of extra noise. But if you can make time for exercise, if you can make time for physical activity, take a moment before you start, reflect on what you're about to do. Try to drive your focus to being in the moment and enjoy the process. And if you want to achieve different flow states, or if you want to kind of work towards that, then you have to challenge yourself a little bit. Exercise should be a little complex. Exercise should be a little risky. That doesn't mean hanging upside down by one arm off a building, like you can see some of the rooftop parkour guys do on YouTube. But what it means is, do something different. Do a workout that you haven't done before. You know, maybe take a class you haven't done before. And I'm going to put that challenge to myself. I'll challenge myself to do that too. Kind of put my money where my mouth is. Right now, or for the last few months, I've been focusing on doing a little bit of bombing on mountain bikes to try to get that flow state. But we can also do that in class, in group fitness. So I wanted to explain a little bit about the interview with Dr. Csikszentmihalyi. I certainly appreciated his time. I think we had a little miscommunication, definitely from my end, and I didn't want to spike the interview. I wanted to use it because I still think there's valuable information in there. And if you're not familiar with the flow state, then I'm going to have a couple book titles down below in the show notes. Obviously, I'm going to have some of Dr. Csikszentmihalyi's work. I'm going to have his recent work on running in the flow state. I'm going to have Stephen Kotler's work. I'm going to have Rise of Superman, because I think Rise of Superman is a good kind of introduction to the concept of flow and how you can start working to achieve more flow in your life. I'm also going to have a link to his Flow Genome Project, so you can find out a little bit more about that and learn about that. So again, this was a special edition of All About Fitness. Normally, I try to do them in sequential order. I had some stuff already lined up, which is why I don't have it numbered. I just wanted to throw this out there because the conversation I had with Gray, and we ended up talking about movement with kids, and it seemed to make sense that talking about if I'm, you know, if I have the noted professor in the field talking about flow state with kids, then that becomes the next podcast in the series. If you have any comments or feedback, please, by all means, feel free to send them to me, Pete at PeteMcCallFitness.com. You can find me on Twitter, PeteMC_fitness. That's on Twitter. And my Instagram is PeteMcCall_fitness. So I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to this. I got some really killer interviews coming up. Not only with Dr. Csikszentmihalyi, well, I was really surprised and honored when he gave me his time, but I have some really cool content I'm working on. So if you're a new listener to All About Fitness, please keep checking in and keep checking back regularly. And I look forward to having you stop by for future episodes. Take care and have a healthy day.